This is the Best of Fair on the Mormon Faircast. This episode comes from the 2006 Fair Conference and is a talk delivered by Dr. David Stewart entitled DNA and the Book of Mormon.
David Stewart, MD, was raised in Massachusetts and Maryland. He was a president scholar at Brigham Young University, graduating with summa cum laude honors in molecular biology in just 2 years. He received his medical degree from the University of Colorado School of Medicine in 1999. Completed surgical internship and orthopedic surgery residency at the University of Texas Medical Branch and completed fellowship training in pediatric orthopedic and scoliosis surgery at Children's Hospital, Los Angeles. Dr. Stewart's a member of the Alpha Omega Alpha Medical Honor Society and received numerous awards for excellence in clinical practice and medical research for his contributions to international health. He is fluent in several Eastern European languages and is active in international medical charity and educational work in Eastern Europe and Asia. He served a full-time LDS mission in Russia and has written on LDS topics, including church growth, missionary work, and DNA in the Book of Mormon. He lives in Las Vegas with his wife and young children. And I just have to add, you know, I have reporters call me from time to time, and they want to talk about different things, and they all want to say, they all tell me, and do you know how to get a hold of David Stewart? So all the reporters at Holtz like to talk to him as well. So with that, we'll turn the time over to David Stewart.
Mark Schindler of Spruce Grove, Alberta, who passed away very prematurely nearly 3 years ago. Many, if not most, of those present have benefited from Mark's insight and responsiveness. His depth and breadth of knowledge on many gospel topics was unparalleled. One author wrote of C.S. Lewis that he was the most thoroughly converted Christian that he'd ever met, and that his faith was integrated into every aspect of his life. And I believe that the same could be said of Mark. Even in times of great personal adversity, Mark remained an untiring defender of the faith. And I pay tribute to Mark Schindler for setting new standards in defense of the faith and for showing what is possible to those who believe. He was a good friend and a wonderful person, and he's greatly missed. Oh, I'm okay. I'm just going to stand here. The Book of Mormon recounts the story of small Israelite groups headed by Lehi and Mulek that were brought from ancient Jerusalem to the American continent by the hand of the Lord. Prophets who taught of Christ were called from among this people for over a millennium, but eventually the people fell into apostasy and one branch of the civilization was destroyed. Modern prophets from Joseph Smith to the present have consistently taught that the remnant of the other branch, the Lamanites, are ancestors of modern Native Americans. Joseph Smith, prophet and translator of the Book of Mormon, stated, "The Book of Mormon is a record of the forefathers of our western tribes of Indians, having been found through the ministration of a holy angel and translated into our own language by the gift and power of God. By it, we learn that our western tribes of Indians are descendants from that Joseph who was sold into Egypt." The Lord's revelations to Joseph Smith repeatedly refer to Native Americans as Lamanites. Dedicatory prayers of temples given by LDS prophets in Bolivia, Guatemala, Hawaii, Mexico, and Peru have proclaimed the descent of indigenous peoples from Lehi's colony. Elder Spencer W. Kimball declared, "With pride I tell those who come to my office that a Lamanite is a descendant of one Lehi who left Jerusalem some 600 years before Christ and with his family crossed the mighty deep and landed in America. And Lehi and his family became the ancestors of all of the Indian and Mestizo tribes in North and South and Central America and in the islands of the sea. For in the middle of their history there were those who left America in ships of their making and went to the islands of the sea." In recent years, some critics have alleged their research demonstrating considerable homology between modern Native American, Mongolian, and Siberian DNA, as well as a seeming lack of homology between modern Jewish and Native American DNA, provides conclusive proof that the traditional LDS view of Native American origins is false. Some LDS defenders have attempted to explain the data by invoking limited geography theories proposing that Nephite and Lamanite activity was restricted to a small area in Central America and that any trace of Israelite DNA was lost by intermixing with larger indigenous people groups. A closer examination demonstrates that DNA evidence does not discredit traditional LDS views and that the views of critics are based on non-factual assumptions and unsupportable misinterpretations of genetic data. Critic Thomas Murphy writes that some of the most revealing research into Native American genetics comes from analysis of mtDNA and presents mitochondrial DNA data to support his conclusion that Native Americans could not possibly have an origin in ancient Israel. Over 98% of modern Native Americans tested to date carry mitochondrial DNA haplogroups A, B, C, or D. Outside of the Americas, these haplogroups are most commonly found in modern Mongolian and Siberian populations and are rarely found in modern Jews. Another 1% carry haplogroup X, which is also found in South Siberian, European, and Near Eastern populations. Mr. Murphy's arguments are based on the assumption that modern Jewish mtDNA accurately represents the mtDNA of ancient Israel. Findings of different Jewish groups show little mtDNA commonality, but closely reflect the mtDNA of their host populations, flatly contradict Mr. Murphy's assumptions. Mitochondrial DNA studies have had little success in linking different Jewish groups, leading geneticists to discount mtDNA as being notoriously unreliable in ascertaining Jewish roots. The University College London study found that while different Jewish communities were founded by relatively few female ancestors, this process was independent in different geographic areas, and that the female ancestors of different Jewish communities were largely unrelated. Nicholas Wade wrote, "A new study now shows that the women in 9 Jewish communities from Georgia to Morocco have vastly different genetic histories from the men. The women's identities, however, are a mystery because their genetic signatures are not related to present-day Middle Eastern populations or to each other." Authors Mark Thomas and colleagues report, "In no case is there clear evidence of unbroken genetic continuity from early dispersal events to the present. Unfortunately, in many cases, it is not possible to infer the geographic origin of the founding mtDNAs within the different Jewish groups with any confidence." Dr. Shea Cohen of Harvard University observed, "The authors are correct in saying the historical origins of most Jewish communities are unknown. Even close mtDNA homologies would not necessarily prove an Israelite origin for the mtDNA of modern Jews, but the conspicuous absence of such homologies provides strong circumstantial evidence of non-Israelite origins for the mtDNA and much of the other genetic makeup of most modern Jews. With no evidence that modern Jewish mtDNA accurately represents the mtDNA of ancient Israel, and considerable evidence to the contrary, claims of Israelite lineage cannot be either confirmed or denied based on mtDNA data." Joseph's wife Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, is the ancestral mother of the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. While her genealogy is unknown, there is no reason to believe that her mitochondrial lineage or that of her descendants, including the Lehites, would have matched that of the tribe of Judah. The presence of mtDNA types in Native Americans that do not match those found in modern Jews is fully consistent with both Book of Mormon and Bible accounts. Mitochondrial DNA studies have demonstrated that Native Americans have less mtDNA diversity than any other large people group of comparable size, and even less diversity than the much smaller modern Jewish population. The DNA research of Dr. DeAndrew Merriweather has suggested that the mitochondrial genetics of Native Americans could be explained by a single migration, while others believe that there may have been 2 to 4 migrations of closely related people groups. One author wrote, "Most Indians of North America and all Indians of Central and South America seem to be descended from this initial wave of migrants. Similarities in Amerindian languages, as well as in DNA, point to the conclusion that a very small group of migrants gave rise to this enormous, far-flung assemblage of peoples in a relatively short time. Genetic evidence of one or a few closely related founding groups serving as the ancestors of the overwhelming majority of Native Americans is fully consistent with traditional LDS views of Native American origins from the Lamanites, Nephites, and Mulekites." Mr. Murphy presents only one example of an ostensibly non-Jewish group that he believes to be decisively confirmed by modern genetics to have at least some Israelite roots. The Lemba, which he mentions 10 times in order to highlight his contrast with Native Americans. He writes, "Molecular anthropologists Neil Bradman and Mark Thomas have used the distinctive Cohen modal haplotype to link ancient Hebrews to the modern population of the Lemba. The Lemba, a black southern African Bantu-speaking population, draw upon their oral traditions to assert a Jewish ancestry. The Book of Mormon claims of an Israelite ancestry for Native Americans would certainly fit into this phenomenon. But DNA tests of claims by the Lemba yielded a strikingly different outcome than we have seen with Mormon claims about Native Americans. Two studies have now demonstrated that one of the Lemba clans carries a high frequency of a particular Y chromosome termed the Cohen modal haplotype, which is known to be characteristic of the paternally inherited Jewish priesthood and is thought, more generally, to be a potential signature haplotype of Judaic origin. If the Book of Mormon documented actual Israelite migrations to the New World, then one would expect to find similar evidence to that found in a Lemba clan in one or more Native American populations. Such evidence, however, has not been forthcoming. The Cohen modal haplotype, or CMH, is a genetic marker postulated to be inherited from Aaron HaKohen, brother of Moses. This marker is believed to have originated approximately 3,000 years ago, a suitable time frame for a presumptive origin with the biblical Aaron. The CMH is found in approximately 45 to 55% of Ashkenazic and Sephardic Kohens, compared to just 2 to 3% of non-Kohen Jews. It is also found in the Buba clan of the Lemba tribe of Zimbabwe, the Banai Menashe of India, and in several non-Jewish populations, including Armenians, Kurds, Hungarians, and Central and Southern Italians. The Book of Mormon account does not support Mr. Murphy's assertion that the CMH should have been present among the Lehites. We would not expect small Israelite groups that left Israel without Cohen priests to carry the Cohen modal haplotype. Lehi was a descendant of Joseph. Mulek, son of Zedekiah, was a descendant of Judah. While the lineages of Ishmael, Zoram, and the servants of Mulek are unknown, there is no textual evidence that Cohen priests were present among these groups. Had Cohens been present, it seems unlikely that Lehi and other non-Cohens could have officiated in ordinances like sacrifice that were restricted to Levite priests by the Mosaic law. Cohens were specifically forbidden from intermarrying with other Israelites, accounting for the high frequency of the CMH in today's Jewish Cohens and its presence in only 2 to 3% of non-Cohen Jews, even after an additional 26 centuries of intermixing. The presence of the CMH in diaspora Jewish groups with Cohens, including the Lemba and B'nai Menashe, and its absence in Native Americans is an expected finding fully consistent with the Book of Mormon story. While he sharply criticizes traditional LDS views because of the lack of homology between Native American and modern Jewish mtDNA, Mr. Murphy inexplicably fails to disclose that the Lemba have virtually no mtDNA commonality with other Jewish groups. Dr. Himla Sudyal noted that using mtDNA, the Lemba were indistinguishable from other Bantu-speaking populations. Murphy also fails to mention that in contrast to the Lehites and the last 10 tribes who left Israel over 2.5 millennia ago, the Lemba are believed to be descended from Yemenite Jews who migrated to their current location in Zimbabwe less than 1,000 years ago, representing a recent offshoot of post-diaspora Judaism. Yet it is only through the priestly Cohen modal haplotype that the Lemba have been identified as having a possible Jewish genetic origin at all. Mr. Murphy repeatedly demands similar evidence, such as he thinks he has found with the Lemba, for the Israelite ancestry of Native Americans, while failing to disclose that the Cohen modal haplotype is the only known haplotype with a presumptive origin in ancient Israel, demonstrating significant homogeneity among Jewish populations worldwide. Jewish DNA researcher Dr. Ken Jacobs stated, "The only Jewish subgroup that does show some homogeneity, descendants of the Kohanim, or priestly class, makes up only about 2% of the Jewish population. Even within the Kohanim, and certainly within the rest of the Jewish people, there's a vast amount of genetic variation." In view of the lack of a single validated CMH-like haplotype among modern Jews relevant to non-Cohen Israelites, it seems that Mr. Murphy has contrived a fool's errand for Book of Mormon believers. Although critics have claimed that Native Americans and modern Jews share no relevant Y chromosome affinities, recent data have proven such statements resoundingly false. Douglas Forbes points out that Y chromosome S&P biallelic marker QP36, also known by the mutation marker M242, postulated by Behar and colleagues to be a founding lineage group among Ashkenazi Jews, is also present in Iranian and Iraqi Jews, and is a founding lineage present in 31% of self-identified Native Americans in the U.S. A branch of the QP36 lineage, M323, is also found in Yemenite Jews. The QP36 lineage is ancestral to the QM3 mutation group. The QP36 and QM3 lineages together, haplogroup Q, are found in over 76% of Native Americans. Douglas Forbes further writes, We find M242, another name for QP36, scattered all over Central Eurasia and concentrated in Turkestan, just north of Iran. The 10 tribes were taken captive to Media, northwest Iran. So M242 is found scattered just where you would expect it to be if legends of the 10 tribes escaping captivity by going north are true. While the ethnohistory behind these variations remains to be elucidated, these intriguing findings produce considerable difficulty for critics' arguments. The finding of two dominant Y chromosome haplotypes among Native Americans is fully consistent with traditional LDS views of Lehi and Ishmael representing the principal male ancestors of Native Americans, with Zoram and the Mulekites contributing minor lineages. The discovery of a founding Y chromosome haplotype lineage present at very high frequency in Native American populations corresponding to a founding lineage group present in Jewish populations worldwide demonstrates remarkable consistency with the Book of Mormon account. Douglas Forbes further writes, other West Eurasian lineages found in Native American test subjects include R, E3B, J, F, G, and I. All of these are also found in modern Jews. The question of which of these latter lineages are pre-Columbian and which may represent post-Columbian admixture has not been definitively resolved and will require further research. Some widespread Jewish Y chromosome affinities represent recent post-diaspora influences. Geneticists Doron Behar and colleagues report, the Levites, another paternally inherited Jewish caste, display evidence for multiple recent origins, with Ashkenazi Levites having a high frequency of a distinctive non-Near Eastern haplogroup. The Ashkenazi Levite microsatellite haplotypes within this haplogroup are extremely tightly clustered with an inferred common ancestor within the past 2,000 years, a founding event likely involving one or very few European men occurring at a time close to the initial formation and settlement of the Ashkenazi community is the most likely explanation for the presence of this distinctive haplogroup found today in greater than 50% of Ashkenazi Levites. Bradman, Rosengarten, and Skretzky write, comparisons of the Ashkenazi Levite data set with other groups studied suggest that Y chromosome haplotypes present at high frequency in Ashkenazi Levites are most likely to have an East European or West Asian origin and not to have originated in the Middle East. David Keyes writes that the Ashkenazi Levite marker was most likely introduced into the Jewish population with the mass conversion of Turkic Khazars between 700 and 900 AD. Genetic evidence of presumably non-Israelite origins for many of today's Jews highlights the fallacy of using modern Jewish genetics as a definitive standard against which claims of Israelite ancestry for other groups are assessed. Certain Y chromosome haplotypes have been identified frequently among modern Jews and Near Eastern Arabs. These haplotypes, some claim, represent markers for regional affiliation to the Near East. The absence of many of these haplotypes in Native Americans have led some to claim that traditional LDS views of an Israelite ancestry for Native Americans are false. Michael Hammer reports that Jewish and non-Jewish Middle Eastern populations share similar frequencies of certain Y chromosome haplotypes. However, he cautions, many of the same haplotypes present in Jewish and Middle Eastern populations were also present in samples from Europe, although at varying frequencies. Most so-called regional affiliation haplotypes are present in only a fraction of modern Near Eastern peoples. These haplotypes are neither inclusive, that is, not all modern Near Easterners share these markers, nor exclusive in that their absence does not preclude an origin in ancient Israel or elsewhere in the Near East. Studies of modern Near Eastern groups like Armenians reveal, in many cases, a strong regional structure as the result of a relatively high degree of genetic isolation, even within single ethno-national groups. The vast regional differences seen within the Near East today defy the assumption that a few generic haplogroups or haplotypes can definitively rule in or out a historic origin anywhere within an ethnically heterogeneous region that has been home to many diverse cultures. Simplistic claims that an Israelite ancestry for non-Jewish groups can be ruled in or out based on so-called regional affiliation haplotypes fail to account for known ethnohistoric dynamics. The question of what these haplotypes represent in the ethnohistory of modern peoples, when they were introduced and where they came from, have not even begun to be answered. Hebrew University geneticist Howard Cedar stated, researchers still don't know what the history is behind the variations. As a result, it is difficult to draw conclusions about genetic affinity. Many of the haplotypes shared among modern Jews and Palestinians may represent genetic materials assimilated over centuries of intermarriage rather than genuine Israelite DNA, as not one of these haplotypes has been demonstrated to have been prevalent in Israelite populations before the Babylonian captivity. Dr. John Butler has pointed out an Icelandic study that found that the mtDNA and Y-chromosome haplotypes of many known ancestors were not detectable in a modern population just over a century later. The study traced the genealogy of over 131,000 modern Icelanders back to ancestors born between 1848 and 1892 and between 1742 and 1798. The authors report that the population-wide coalescent analysis of Icelandic genealogies revealed highly positively skewed distributions of descendants to ancestors, with the vast majority of potential ancestors contributing one or no descendants, and a minority of ancestors contributing large numbers of descendants. They observed that this has caused considerable fluctuation in the frequencies of mtDNA and Y-chromosome haplotypes, despite rapid population expansion in Iceland during the past 300 years. 86% of modern Icelandic males descend from just 26% of potential male ancestors born between 1848 and 1892. Women demonstrate even more dramatic trends due to the shorter female intergenerational time. 91.7% of modern Icelandic females descend from just 22% of potential female ancestors born between the same years. This study documents that dramatic shifts in haplotype prevalence can occur and that genetic evidence for many known ancestors is entirely lost in an advanced, peaceful, relatively isolated society over the course of little more than a century. It also cautions against drawing sweeping ethnohistoric conclusions about haplotypes present in many different groups based exclusively on their prevalence in modern societies. One can appreciate the lack of any scientific basis for critics' demands that groups facing frequent episodes of war, persecution, famine, and disease, while experiencing ongoing intermarriage with other groups, should maintain strong haplotype commonalities over 2,600 years of separation. Critic Thomas Murphy writes, genetic data repeatedly point to migrations from Asia between 7,000 and 50,000 years ago. He further writes, as the primary source of Native American origins, he further writes, Asian origin is clearly indicated. Yet mitochondrial DNA researcher Dr. D. Andrew Merriweather wrote, we conclude that Mongolia, or a geographic location common to both contemporary Mongolians and American aboriginals, is the more likely origin of the founders of the New World. While ignored by Mr. Murphy and other critics, the possibility of an outside geographic origin common to both contemporary Mongolians and American aboriginals is allowed by the original researchers. The only compelling genetic validation that the ancient inhabitants of an area are ancestors or close relatives of modern peoples can come from comparisons of ancient and modern DNA. Studies of ancient New World DNA have demonstrated that the early inhabitants of the New World appear to have had all of the four main mtDNA haplogroups, A, B, C, and D, prevalent in modern Native Americans, supporting the belief that ancient Native Americans are in fact the ancestors of the present ones. Issues on the Asian side are more problematic. Very little is known of the people inhabiting Mongolia or South Siberia before 200 BC, over five centuries after the dispersion of the lost tribes. Ethnohistory provides abundant evidence of large people groups of almost entirely unknown origins who settled in Mongolia and South Siberia, which were active areas for mass migration from across Central Asia. As a nomadic people traveling over vast distances but leaving few permanent settlements, the ancient ancestors of the Mongolians are particularly difficult to trace. The nomadic character of the equestrian Mongols, whose predecessors ruled an empire from Eastern Europe to the Pacific, the absence of any real natural barriers across thousands of miles of territory that comprise the largest plain in the world, and the history of hundreds of migrations of people groups, some known, most largely unknown, would lead the objective scholar to question the genetic basis for Mr. Murphy's assumption that those living in Mongolia and South Siberia today harbor essentially the same gene pool as that present thousands or even tens of thousands of years ago. DNA studies of ancient human remains from Mongolia and Siberia, predating the dispersion of Israel, are conspicuously absent. To my knowledge, the only ancient mummies that have been found adjacent to Mongolia are the Tocharians, an ancient and mysterious civilization of blonde and red-headed, Caucasian-appearing people who inhabited the Tarim Basin approximately 3,000 years ago. The Chinese government to date has not permitted DNA testing on these mummies, but mainstream geneticists and anthropologists do not believe the Tocharians to be the principal ancestors or even significant genetic contributors to modern Mongolian, Siberian, or Uyghur populations. Our awareness of the ethnogenetic distinctiveness of the Tocharian people, and even their very existence, comes exclusively from their custom of mummification and from their fortuitous discovery in the desert sands in 1987. The ancient East Asian populations for which we do have some mtDNA data, the Chinese and Japanese, demonstrate strikingly different genetic patterns from those found in modern populations. Ancient human remains tested from Japan contain none of the mtDNA haplogroups shared among 98% of modern Native Americans and 52% of modern Mongolians. Among ancient Chinese studied, only 13% shared a haplogroup with Native Americans, and only two of the haplogroups, B and C, were present at all. Even these ancient Chinese remains are only 2,000 years old, over 7 centuries after the dispersion of the Northern Kingdom of Israel. In contrast, a modern study of Central Chinese has demonstrated the presence of all 4 haplogroups, and the prevalence of the shared haplogroups has increased to 45%. The further back we go, the greater genetic distinctiveness we find between ancient and modern Asian populations. One of the oldest Asian studies of human remains was conducted in the Lindsay area of central China. The authors studied human remains from 3 different time periods and reported, "Our results show that the genetic backgrounds of the 3 populations are distinct from each other. Inconsistent with the geographical distribution, the 2,500-year-old Lindsay population showed greater genetic similarity to present-day European populations than to present-day East Asian populations. The 2,000-year-old Lindsay population had features that were intermediate between the present-day European 2,500-year-old Lindsay populations and present-day East Asian populations. These relationships suggest the occurrence of drastic spatiotemporal changes in the genetic structure of the Chinese people during the past 2,500 years. The authors further note, the 3 smallest genetic distances for the 2,500-year-old Lindsay population were from the Turkish, Icelander, and Finnish, rather than from East Asian populations. Not only did a 2,500-year-old population with strong European genetic features live in central China, but these people appear to be the oldest inhabitants of China yet identified. Yet geneticists are aware of this group, whose genetic features seem to be almost entirely absent from modern Chinese, only because of a recent and relatively unique study. If we were to imagine a hypothetical Lindsay group that might have emigrated to an isolated island in 500 BC, the DNA of their descendants would be completely unrelated to that of modern Chinese and would be classified by proponents of regional affiliation genetics as belonging to a European culture group. Self-proclaimed experts would undoubtedly declare that this group had been proven not to have originated in China at all. The Lindsay data wreak havoc upon the theories of critics who indiscriminately extrapolate the genetics of modern inhabitants onto ancient peoples without supporting DNA evidence. Critics have largely failed to consider scriptural and historical explanations for modern DNA observations. Abraham was a migrant from Ur of the Chaldees and not a native Palestinian. The Lord explicitly forbade intermarriage between Israelites and the native inhabitants of Palestine, commanding, "Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son." The spiritual and social separation between Israel and the surrounding nations is a frequent scriptural theme. Limited intermarriage occurred between Israelites and the surrounding nations during the captivity in Egypt and the early period of the Kingdom of Israel, mainly consisting of the assimilation of foreign wives. Nonetheless, the continued emphasis on spiritual and social separation between Israel and its neighbors would make it foolish to expect genetic regional affiliation markers gathered from a composite of Canaanites, Phoenicians, Philistines, Egyptians, and other groups then inhabiting the ancient Near East to represent a definitive test of early Israelite ancestry. The Assyrian captivity of the northern 10 tribes and the Babylonian captivity of the kingdom of Judah mark turning points of genetic divergence between the Jews who returned to Jerusalem and other Israelite groups. The Jews who returned from the Babylonian captivity found a land with a markedly different ethnic makeup from the predominantly Canaanite Palestine of early Israel. Many of the Canaanite tribes had been completely destroyed, while the Assyrians had resettled men from Babylon and from Cuthah and from Ava and from Hamath and from Sepharvaim, and placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel. And they possessed Samaria and dwelt in the cities thereof. Other groups migrated into Palestine during and after the Babylonian captivity. The returned Jews mixed among a population of Babylonians, Syrians, Assyrians, Edomites, Moabites, and others until after the time of the Savior. These intervening centuries provide abundant opportunity for the introduction of numerous regional affiliation haplotypes that were not necessarily present in ancient Israel. The Jews, who lived in the Near East until after the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, and then gradually made their way into the diaspora, should be expected to share vastly greater genetic commonality with modern Palestinians, Arabs, Kurds, and Iraqis than the Lehites, who left Jerusalem approximately 600 BC, or the 10 tribes of the Northern Kingdom, which were carried away by the Assyrians between 744 and 721 BC, and then lost to history. Rates of intermarriage increased significantly during and after the Babylonian captivity. Transplanted minority groups are generally more likely to intermarry than more homogeneous ethnic groups in their own societies, due to both external cultural pressures and limited internal marriage options. The prophet Ezra initiated separations on a massive scale between Israelite men and their foreign wives. Yet rigid prohibitions on the ubiquitous challenge of intermarriage have rarely been consistently achieved in subsequent generations. WhyMarryJewish.com reports that since 1985, 52% of North American Jews have married non-Jews. Just a few generations of such widespread intermarriage can result in almost a complete loss of initially defining genetic data. Even if the low 10% intermarriage rate reported prior to 1965 had been maintained steady for 2,600 years, modern Jews would bear little genetic resemblance to ancient Israelites. The Bible reports some 600,000 able-bodied footmen among the Israelites at the time of the Exodus, in addition to women and children, suggesting a likely population of at least 2 million. On at least several occasions, the Jewish population was reconstituted from only a fraction of its former peoples, often with considerable influx of non-Israelite genes. Hebrew scholars estimate that the Jewish population had fallen to approximately 300,000 a century after the Babylonian captivity, rising to between 2 and 5 million by the time of Christ, and then falling to less than 1 million following the Roman Jewish Wars. Only a fraction of the Jews returned from Babylon. Only a portion of the Palestinian Jews survived the Roman counterattacks leading to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, and many Jews perished in the European pogroms. The asymmetric nature of all of these events would have resulted in the loss of many Israelite genes from the Jewish gene pool. Dr. Robert Pollack observes that Ashkenazi Jews, who constitute 80% of the world Jewish population, descend from a rather small number of families who survived the pogroms of the mid-1600s. Geneticist Doran Behar notes that from an estimated number of just 25,000 in the 11th century, the Ashkenazi Jewish population had grown to more than 8.5 million at the beginning of the 19th century. Daniel Elazar of the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs wrote that at the end of the 11th century, 97% of the world's Jews were Sephardic and just 3% were Ashkenazi. In the mid-17th century, Sephardim still outnumbered Ashkenazim 3-2. The Ashkenazic high point came in 1931 when they constituted nearly 92% of world Jewry. Ethnohistory repeatedly documents the amplification of a small subset of precursor DNA in modern Jewish populations, the inevitable loss of many Israelite haplotypes altogether, and the introduction of large amounts of non-Israelite DNA. Such ethnohistoric data resoundingly repudiate critics' assumptions that modern Jewish populations represent a comprehensive and valid control of the genetics of ancient Israel. Dr. Robert Pollack further observed, though there are many deleterious versions of genes shared within the Ashkenazi community, there are no DNA sequences common to all Jews and absent from all non-Jews. There is nothing in the human genome that makes or diagnoses a person as a Jew. Ethnohistoric and genetic data demonstrate that modern Jewish populations cannot possibly contain all of the genetic material present in pre-dispersion Israel, and that few modern Jewish haplotypes are even plausible candidates for ancient Israelite origin. While some critics have claimed that the DNA similarities between modern Native Americans, Mongolians, and Siberians discredit LDS teachings, I find just the opposite. The consistency between genetics, history, scripture, and modern patriarchal blessings is remarkable. Genetic data provide no evidence that the haplotypes shared among modern Native Americans, Mongolians, and Siberians were present in Mongolia or Siberia prior to the dispersion of Israel. Genetic data also suggests that the prevalence of these haplotypes may have increased significantly over time in East Asian populations. Almost nothing is known about the genetics of ancient Israel. The prophet Jeremiah wrote that the 10 tribes had been dispersed to the lands of the north, a designation for which few lands seem as appropriate as the vast steppes of Siberia and Mongolia. Well before Mr. Murphy's criticisms of traditional LDS views hit the popular press, I had confirmed from missionaries and members that LDS patriarchal blessings have identified members of all of the tribes of Israel in Mongolia, a greater number than I am aware of being found in any other country to date. These blessings were given independently by patriarchs and stakes throughout the world where ethnic Mongolian missionaries served, as Mongolia had no stakes or patriarchs at the time. More recently, a similar phenomenon has been reported from Siberia. A recently returned missionary from the Russian Novosibirsk mission wrote, "While there, I had the unique opportunity to be present for the coming of two American patriarchs who delivered the first ever patriarchal blessings to the Siberian saints on two separate occasions. What turned up was a staggering number of representatives of every single tribe in the relatively few blessings given." My research into patriarchal lineage declarations has consistently found a strong correlation between specific tribal lineages and certain ethno-national groups. While this does not offer any kind of scientific proof, it should at least open our minds to consider the possibility of a common origin for Native Americans and many modern Mongolians and Siberians outside of East Asia, perhaps in ancient Israel. One wonders if at least some elements of the genetics of these groups may not represent the genetics of ancient Israel better than modern Jewish populations, which have extensively assimilated the genes of their neighbors. The only part of the data that has not yet been explained in harmony with the Book of Mormon story is the timing. Many scientists state the genetic divergence of Native Americans as having arisen from migrations between 10,000 and 15,000 BC, rather than shortly after 600 BC, as stated in the Book of Mormon account. Mitochondrial DNA studies of the settling of the Americas have led to vastly different time estimates. Ann Gibbons reports, all this disagreement prompts Stanford University linguist Dr. Joseph Greenberg to simply ignore the new mtDNA data. He says, every time, it seems to come to a different conclusion. I've just tended to set aside the mtDNA evidence. I'll wait until they get their act together. Martin Tanner explains, the idea that haplogroup X has been in the Americas for 10 to 35,000 years is based solely on the assumptions of the Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium, which include completely neutral variants, no mutation, no migration, constant near-infinite population size, and completely random mate choice. In the Book of Mormon account, most of the Hardy-Weinberg assumptions are inapplicable. The wilderness journey, the ocean voyage, and the colonization of the New World result in patterns of genetic selection and DNA migration different from that found in Lehi's home environment. Closely related individuals married, and we are dealing with, initially, a very small group, not a nearly infinite population, which would dramatically alter DNA marker distribution and inheritance over time. If we take these assumptions about haplogroup X instead of the Hardy-Weinberg assumptions, haplogroup X could have been introduced in the Americas as recently as 1 to 2,000 years ago, far less than the 10 to 35,000 years under the Hardy-Weinberg assumptions. Geneticist Mark Seelstad and colleagues note some of the problems with early dating. Our results do not contradict earlier studies of DNA in the autosomes, whose standard errors were large and whose authors gave several reasons to expect their dates to overestimate the timing of the first human arrivals into the Americas. In addition, a more recent time of entry makes the proposal of the Amerind language family more plausible, or conversely, given the rapidity of linguistic change, the existence of a unified Amerind family would itself imply a fairly recent settling of the Americas, as we have suggested here. While consensus science still dates the peopling of the Americas well before the Lehites, dating methods depend highly upon assumptions that may not be universally valid and have a wide margin of error. Many estimates of the time of settling of the Americas have been shortened greatly in recent years. Time will tell whether current estimates will hold or whether continued revision may be required. Whatever one's beliefs on the DNA issue, critics' attacks on LDS scripture for describing Native Americans as Lamanites can only be considered hypocritical when these people continue to be erroneously referred to as Indians more than five centuries after Columbus. The pseudoscientific term Amerindian, used by Mr. Murphy, does not get around the problem that Native Americans are not Indians at all. Even the terms Native Americans and indigenous peoples are problematic, as migrations from a homeland in the Eastern Hemisphere are acknowledged by Latter-day Saints and Gentile scholars alike. For modern mixed populations, the terms Latino and Hispanic are based entirely upon the European admixture, while conveying nothing about pre-Columbian origins. While the word Indian was used on many occasions by Joseph Smith and other early church leaders, this term does not occur in LDS scripture at all. Perhaps the use of the term Lamanite reflects the fact that their creator understood their origins in a way that most scientists still do not. When I was in medical school, physicians believed that hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, provided substantial cardiac benefits with no increase in cancer risk to the average postmenopausal woman. Numerous, seemingly well-designed, large-scale studies had corroborated these findings. While conducting public health research in an Eastern European country, I was informed by a local cardiologist that they did not use HRT because of the belief that it increased cancer risk. At the time, I felt that his society was primitive for harboring views in opposition to abundant medical literature. Yet more recent U.S. studies have concluded that traditional HRT regimens incur significant cancer risks while failing to provide cardiovascular benefits, leading to sweeping reversal of prior teachings that had served as the basis for the medical care of millions of women. The initial HRT studies were much more rigorous than many ethnohistoric and anthropologic studies, which draw from far fewer data points. Many other examples could be cited of theories once widely considered to have been rigorously proven, which have been almost completely repudiated by subsequent data. Almost every year brings unanticipated findings that require drastic revision of existing theories. Most individuals would be surprised to learn how few data points current consensus theories for the peopling of the Americas, such as the Bering Land Bridge theory, are based upon, and how many scholars in the field hold widely different views. Recent archaeological finds in South America that appear to be older than those in North America have led some scholars to champion the Pacific colonization theory, while others believe that the data are too sparse to settle the debate. It is fascinating to consider not only how frequently consensus science has changed its pronouncements, but the societal amnesia that leads each new theory to be proclaimed as fact as definitively as those it supplanted. While the real experts acknowledge the limitations of their data and theories, the popularization of such theories often overextends their mandates. One observant cartoonist quipped, "My opinions may have changed, but not the fact that I am right." The innate human desire for answers has always led to overextended conclusions in the face of inadequate evidence. Few individuals are able to acknowledge multiple feasible possibilities or to defer judgment until better data becomes available. The real test of our insight as scientists and of our discernment as Christians is not in our acknowledgement of that which is already widely accepted, but in our ability to correctly identify present truths. The Pharisees claimed to accept ancient prophets while rejecting the living Christ of whom the prophets testified. "We know that God spake unto Moses, as for this fellow, we know not from whence he is." Many professed scholars today are happy to claim the mantle of science for their acceptance of that which is already well known, while demonstrating a lack of understanding of the principles on which prior discoveries were made by rejecting possibilities that do not fit with their current, with their personal assumptions. We're all beneficiaries of theories and principles that have overcome great resistance before eventual acceptance. Great scientists and inventors have always possessed the ability to separate the real facts from the unproven assumptions of popular consensus and have pursued their own visions without regard to the deprecations of short-sighted critics. While much can be learned from consensus, those who rely on it exclusively perish when the floods descend. Rather than placing our faith in the ever-changing popular and academic consensus, the shifting sands of tiny minds, Christ invites us to build upon his rock. He declares, I am the Lord thy God. I am more intelligent than they all. Some evangelical groups have latched onto the claims of dissident and ex-Mormon scholars that DNA evidence disproves Book of Mormon historicity in their efforts to discredit the LDS faith. DNA and dating arguments do not present an exclusive challenge to LDS teachings, although critics would like to present them as such. Rather, such arguments produce issues for the biblical Judeo-Christian worldview in general. Strict biblical chronology suggests that man has been on the earth for only 6,000 years and that a universal flood occurred approximately 2350 BC. If all mankind are descended from Eve, why do not all humans share the same mitochondrial DNA? Where is the archaeological evidence of a great worldwide flood? God promised Abraham, I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore. Yet no Abrahamic Y chromosome has been identified among modern Jewish populations who consider themselves to be children of Abraham. While addressing such topics is beyond the scope of this presentation, attempts of critics to characterize LDS teachings as unscientific and irrational, while failing to apply similar standards of objective validation to their own beliefs, amounts to a suicide bombing. There is something distinctly bizarre about evangelical groups like Living Hope Ministries enlisting agnostic evolutionist scholars as their experts to challenge the LDS Church over Book of Mormon DNA issues. If one could continue the interviews by asking these same scholars about many events described in the Bible, one wonders if their admirers would continue to accept their pronouncements with such credulity. Every faith accepts some beliefs that lie outside of the ever-changing popular and academic consensus. If one were to use popular consensus as the basis for religious belief, what would be left? Studies show that today, most Americans do not believe in the resurrection. Claims that LDS teachings are scientifically untenable, while those of other faiths are well documented, are intrinsically dishonest. My interest in Book of Mormon DNA issues began several years ago when my bishop in Texas asked me to help a less active young man who was struggling with this topic. I carefully and open-mindedly studied the data and wrote a detailed article to highlight for him the fallacy of critics' claims. We established several appointments to meet, but he never appeared. When I finally reached him by phone, he promised to come by and pick up the article when he was interested. I never heard from him again. I've often found that addressing an individual's alleged concerns on one topic only brings forth a litany of others. Many don't want to have their concerns answered. Many have already made the decision to distance themselves from the church on personal grounds, but like to flatter themselves that they are doing so for compelling scientific reasons. Attempts to correct their misunderstanding of science are often met with evasiveness or hostility. Over the past year, I've received many profanity-laced tirades from critics and disaffected ex-Mormons over my writing on the DNA issue. The logic and language of these are not worthy of repetition. Over the course of my life, I've had many non-LDS friends and acquaintances who held religious or personal beliefs that I considered to be unsupportable or even bizarre, yet I've never felt threatened by allowing them the right to believe as they wish. Beyond the desire to defend my own faith from false accusations, I have never felt any desire to discredit other beliefs. Doctrinal criticisms of the LDS Church by evangelical hirelings can only be considered capricious when viewed in the context of studies that have repeatedly documented that massive percentages of their own pastors do not believe in the physical resurrection of Jesus Christ, that Jesus was the Son of God, or that God communicated with ancient prophets. Even from a born-again evangelical viewpoint, Christian researcher George Barna has documented that the biblical purity of teachings acknowledged by Latter-day Saints is above average for Christians in general. In The Scandal of the Evangelical Conscience, Ronald Sider has documented that the lifestyle of most evangelicals is strikingly discrepant from scriptural standards. Christ taught, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He declared, "Why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye?" While Latter-day Saints are not perfect, and some negative exceptions exist in any large group, the remarkable record of LDS society on the whole for scriptural living and morality has been extensively documented by sociologic studies. Critics are not objective evidence seekers or fair-minded scholars, but mere cafeteria sophists, playing up findings they believe they can present to their advantage while ignoring data they find problematic. To my knowledge, critics today have not been able to produce a single publication in a peer-reviewed scientific journal on Book of Mormon DNA issues. While validation of study controls is critical to the testing of any scientific hypothesis, Mr. Murphy and other critics have accepted without validation the assumption that modern Jewish DNA represents a comprehensive and valid control of the genetics of ancient Israel. This assumption in itself demonstrates profound ignorance of Jewish ethnohistoric dynamics. It is rather shocking that while the original study authors repeatedly comment explicitly that their studies of modern Jewish populations do not necessarily show that the haplotypes in question represent early Israelite genetics, Mr. Murphy and other critics have conveniently omitted mention of these cautions. Mr. Murphy fails to disclose the lack of any meaningful mtDNA commonality among modern Jewish groups that undermines one of his foundational arguments attacking LDS views. The internal control he presents of the Lemba is not comparable to the Lehites or the Lost Tribes because of its very recent origin and fails the mtDNA test he imposes on Native Americans. Mr. Murphy fails to mention that there is no reason to expect Cohen priests carrying the Cohen modal haplotype, the only known haplotype demonstrating significant homogeneity among Jewish populations worldwide, to have been present among the Lehites. He fails to acknowledge the finding of a founding Y chromosome lineage present in Native American populations at a very high frequency corresponding to a founding lineage identified in Jewish populations worldwide. He presents no data to support his assumption that ancient Mongolians and Siberians share similar genetic makeup to modern peoples and ignores compelling genetic data from other Far East populations demonstrating drastic genetic change over time. His writing gives no evidence of any serious attempted analysis of scriptural or historical events that could impact genetics, instead relying upon assumption and caricature. Mr. Murphy's authoritative pronouncement that the Book of Mormon emerged from Joseph Smith's own struggles with his God and many similar statements demonstrate his bias and agenda. His hiring of a publicist to pitch his claims to the media rather than enduring the scrutiny of an informed audience is a hallmark of bogus science and demonstrates that he is more of a propagandist than a scientist. He grossly misrepresents LDS policies towards Native Americans and ignores the Church's strong and consistent record of supporting Native American interests dating back to times when Native Americans were scarcely considered human by the U.S. government. A review of some of the major problems with Mr. Murphy's claims suggests that his writings are unlikely to pass muster with those familiar with genetics, history, and scripture, and that critics will likely continue to find their primary audience among disaffected ex-Mormons and anti-Mormon groups. Claims of critics like Simon Southerton that modern Native American and Jewish DNA data represent the most devastating scientific evidence facing the LDS Church today only demonstrate the profound intellectual poverty of critics' arguments. When I was a missionary in Russia, atheists frequently cited cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin's statement after traveling into space, "I didn't see any God up there," concluding with the logic, "Therefore, God does not exist." Ill-founded DNA criticisms of traditional LDS views arise from the same level of simplistic ignorance, erroneous assumptions, and non-sequitur logic. The critics' claims that DNA evidence refutes Book of Mormon historicity do not present the thinking man's conundrum of conflict between science and religion, but are rather made-for-media claims which excite sensational headlines for the uninformed while failing rudimentary scientific standards. Critics demonstrate that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. The individual who does not understand the limitations of the few data points he possesses and who is unable to separate his assumptions from fact. One with learning, but without wisdom, is often more hopelessly ignorant than the individual who knows nothing at all. Truly, God is able to show forth great power which looks small into the understanding of men. The inability or unwillingness of many to acknowledge his power ultimately demonstrates their small-mindedness rather than erudition. We do not need to apologize for our prophets. Many items in the Book of Mormon that critics had previously claimed as impossible or anachronistic have since been shown to have existed. I testify that many teachings currently presented by critics as proof of Mormonism's falsehood will one day be recognized as some of the most remarkable evidences of Joseph Smith's prophetic mission. We can take comfort that many honest and perceptive people see through the hypocrisy of those who lie in wait to deceive. The recent explosion of molecular DNA data has led to a considerable increase in knowledge about our roots. However, some individuals have drawn and widely publicized conclusions well beyond those supported by existing data. Claims of critics that DNA evidence refutes traditional LDS views are based in a misunderstanding or misrepresentation of science and ignorance of history and scripture. There is still much we do not know about the genetics of ancient and modern populations, but careful study demonstrates that the teachings of LDS prophets are fully consistent with existing DNA data. Thank you. Let me go through a few questions quickly since we have little time. Let's see. Was ancient Jewish DNA obtained, and if so, how? Is there a great variety of ancient Jewish DNA available? As far as I know, none. And even if there were ancient DNA discovered from the area of Palestine, there would still be a question as to the ethnicity of the DNA, whether it was Phoenician, Philistine, Canaanite, Israelite. And so, as I pointed out, there is no ancient Jewish DNA data. Can DNA studies be used to establish migration patterns within the Americas or identifying a proto-people carrying haplotypes consistent with Book of Mormon peoples? Well, as I pointed out, without a knowledge of ancient Israelite genetics, it's difficult to know what an alleged proto-people should look like. As I pointed out, the mitochondrial DNA studies and others do show that the vast majority of Native Americans are very closely related. There have been some studies of gradient DNAs showing various gradients with a little bottleneck in Central America, and some people believe a north to south gradient. But the difficulty with those studies is that there are far more significant geographic barriers present in South America than there are in North America, and almost all of the haplotypes present in North American populations are also present in South Americans. With the North American plains, one would expect a greater degree of intermingling. And so it's really very difficult to answer that, and as I've mentioned with the various archaeologic discoveries in North and South America, this is still an area where we have very few data points, and it's an area of actively ongoing research. Do you believe that North American Indians are closely related to Central American Indians? Well, as I pointed out, the Central and South and most of the North American Indians do appear to be fairly closely related, but there is kind of an outlier, more of the Eskimo Inuit group in North America, that does not seem to be as closely related to the Central and South Americans, and this is, as I pointed out, probably where some of the smaller or later migrations may come in. Did you mean to say that Mormons believe that all Native Americans are descended from Book of Mormon peoples, that they come to an empty continent? I did not say that, and I would say it's not clear. I believe, as LDS prophets have taught, that Native Americans are in fact descended from Book of Mormon peoples, but as far as the proportionality, that is more of a religious question than a scientific question, for which I will defer judgment. As I recall, Mr. Murphy's research was presented in his PhD dissertation in anthropology at the University of Washington. What does that say about his dissertation committee? Well, as you know, the intra-institutional review standards are typically much less rigorous than standards that involve multiple institutions, in the sense that it's more difficult to get something published in a prominent or prestigious national journal than it is to pass muster with local faculty. And of course, his committee is not knowledgeable about LDS things or LDS theology and probably has a fairly limited genetic or molecular biology background, since his background is as an anthropologist, and so I can't comment beyond that. Some suggest that Lehi's group was not alone in the Americas and they have intermixed with existing populations. Is there any DNA evidence of this? Does the evidence indicate possible origins of these other peoples? Well, other than the similarities that I've already pointed out, again, this is more of a theological question than a scientific one. The mtDNA studies do show that Native Americans have less mitochondrial DNA diversity than any other large people group of comparable size, and with a few notable exceptions, mainly the northern North American Indian groups, most of the other Americans appear to be fairly closely related, but could there have been other existing haplotypes that could have been lost? Sure, and we see this in the example that I pointed out with the Lindsay population of a 2,500-year-old population with genetic features that are almost entirely absent from modern peoples. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Questions or comments about this episode can be sent to podcast@fairlds.org or join the conversation at fairblog.org. Tell your friends about us and help increase the popularity of this podcast by rating it in iTunes. Music for this episode was provided courtesy of Lawrence Green. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or of Fair.